You're listening to the Kurdistan in America podcast, the official podcast of the Kurdistan Regional Government Representation in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Dulavan Barwari. This is the first episode of Season 2. It features a discussion with two distinguished guests from the American University of Kurdistan, Dr. Hunar Issa, the Secretary of the Board of Trustees, and Dr. Randall Rhodes, the President of the University. But before the interview, I will give you a brief update on the latest news from the Kurdistan region. As usual, we'll begin with the KRG-Baghdad relations. Last month, a KRG delegation headed by Deputy Prime Minister Qubat Talabani visited Baghdad to negotiate an agreement with Iraqi officials about the region's share of 2021 federal budget. The two sides had reached an agreement, and Prime Minister Mustafa Kadhimi's cabinet approved a 2021 draft budget on December 21st, and now it's under consideration by the Iraqi parliament. And now, I'll pivot to the latest developments in the Kurdistan region. Prime Minister Masoud Barzani's cabinet began the new year by taking a major step in fighting corruption. On January 4th, the Kurdistan region's finance ministry announced that it had cut over 10,000 illegal salaries as part of the government's reform package concerning payments of salaries, allowances, and pensions. The order came after the government's biometric system detected that 10,609 salaries were being received illegally. More illegal salary cuts are expected in the coming months. One of the major pillars of the current cabinet is strengthening transparency. On January 15th, the KRG took another major step in its economic transparency agenda, publishing Deloitte's verified reports on exports and revenues from oil exports. The new report details region's oil production, consumption, exports, and revenues for the first, second, and third quarters of 2020. Another major development in the energy sector is the confirmation by the Kurdistan Parliament of Dr. Kamal Atrushi as the KRG's Minister of Natural Resources. Dr. Atrushi comes to the post with four decades of experience in the oil and gas sector in Europe and the Middle East. Pivoting to the economy. On its annual report released on January 6, the Kurdistan Board of Investment revealed that from July 2019 until December 24, 2020, it had granted permission to a total of 93 investment projects in the Kurdistan region. 91 of the investment projects are to be carried out by local investors, amounting to a total of $2.4 billion, and two of the investments, which amount to $17.5 million, will be carried out jointly by local and foreign investors. Turning to the humanitarian situation. In recent months, the number of suicides in the Yazidi IDP camps have been rising. In a recent article published by the Catholic News Agency, 11 suicides were committed in January. It's believed that the suicides are linked to the difficult living conditions inside the camps, as well as economic and social problems. The Yazidis were the victims of genocide under ISIS, and many continue to live with the trauma of what they endured. According to the KRG's Joint Crisis Coordination Center, the Kurdistan region is currently hosting about 960,000 IDPs and refugees. Close to 700,000 are IDPs, of which 30% are Yazidis. Pivoting to the KRG representation's activities in the U.S. In the past few weeks, KRG representative Bayan Sami Abdurrahman met with officials in the Trump administration before their departure to wish them well and thank them for their cooperation. Ms. Abdurrahman met with David Copley, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Iraq at the State Department, and with Simone Lidin, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Middle East at the Department of Defense. The representative also participated in a virtual event that was hosted by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which highlighted Kurdistan region's gas potential. The discussion was about a study commissioned by the U.S. Department of Energy to analyze the market, pricing, and political economic dynamics of Kurdistan's gas sector. The main speaker was Matthew Zias from the Energy Department. Finally, another exciting update on culture. The Kurdistan region's Department of Antiquities in Dohuk province announced the discovery of an ancient artifact in Semel district. It is a stone tablet carving with a picture symbolizing a king or high priest in the Zoroastrian religion. Zoroastrianism has a history going back about 1,000 years before Christ. It's worth noting that many Zoroastrian artifacts have been found in the area since 2005. And now, the interview with our guests from the American University of Kurdistan, Dr. Hunar Issa, the Secretary of the Board of Trustees, and Dr. Randall Rhodes, the President of the University. Welcome to the Kurdistan in America podcast, the official podcast of the Kurdistan Regional Government Representation in Washington, D.C. Let's begin our discussion with Dr. Hunar. Dr. Hunar, you were one of the pioneers at the American University of Kurdistan, perhaps the first employee. You were involved in the design and construction phase, and then later served as the provost for several years. And now you're serving as the Secretary of the Board of Trustees, and you're also heavily involved in fundraising and accreditation. My first question is a two-part one. There are more than 30 universities across the Kurdistan region. What makes the American University of Kurdistan different than other universities?
Delavan, thank you for inviting me. You have been producing a rich content podcast ever since you've taken up the job. Congratulations.
Greatly appreciate your kind words.
Let me walk you through the early stages and the reason why AUK was established before specifically answering your question. The founder of AUK, His Excellency Prime Minister Masroor Barzani, inferred that gaps existed in the communities, and he attributed this as due to the lack of leaders. He envisioned nurturing the future leaders of our communities through offering high-quality education in a way that would change people's life for the better. In addition, the Hoke is strategically located in the triangle of Turkey, Syria, and Iraq, and the plan was to bring such quality education to the doorsteps of our communities rather than letting young people seek education somewhere else in the globe. Now, what makes us different? What distinguishes AUK from other institutions is that it has instilled the notion of student-centered learning that endeavors to improve participation and retention of knowledge, develop problem-solving skills, foster collaborative learning, and basically making learning more fun. Entrepreneurship and creativity are key components of this process. Another factor that makes AUK unique in the region is that it has sought international accreditation for the institution and its academic programs. With highly experienced leaders at the helm of the institution and qualified faculty and staff, AUK has proactively sought international accreditation with one of the regional U.S. accreditation bodies called New England Commission of Higher Education. Indeed, it is in the midst of achieving this rigorous process right now. All academic colleges of arts and sciences, business, engineering, international studies, and nursing have adopted the requirements of American programmatic accreditation bodies to design curricula, develop policies, lay out assessment planning, and continuous improvement. Through all these processes, AUK has practically taken steps in creating the culture of continuous assessment and improvement as one of the necessities of accreditation process, where data-driven decisions are made on all levels to make informed decisions for improvement. One aspect that actually make AUK very successful, and that was during the pandemic, the cutting-edge technology that AUK possesses, along with highly experienced and qualified international and local faculty, made it possible for AUK to achieve the most successful switch to the online education. While many other national universities were unable to make the switch to online, and consequently their education was disrupted. So, as you can tell, we have several value propositions that justify why AUK should be there and why we are a leading institution in the region.
Now, the second part of my question is, what is the university's vision?
The vision of AUK is to be recognized as a premier institution of higher education in the Middle East and beyond by cultivating academic excellence, fostering creativity, and engaging in the highest caliber of applied research while emphasizing leadership.
This raises a related question to my mind when I think of the university. Why is it branded and modeled as the American University?
American is not a brand, Delavan. We may model after some American universities across the globe, but we are not affiliated to anyone. Due to its flexibility and proven quality, we're following American-style education systems, which create a conducive environment for learning process. Linking to the fact I previously mentioned to demonstrate what makes us different.
The university was launched in 2014, I believe. What are some of the challenges that the UK has experienced?
The establishment was in 2014, but we started groundbreaking of the main AUK campus in December 2013 after a year-long planning and discussion. As we entered 2014, we faced budget cuts from the Iraqi central government, and literally the Kurdistan region faced the biggest economic challenges. These further complicated with the ISIS invasion of the Kurdistan region in August 2014. ISIS was literally 12 kilometers away from our campus, but we never stopped construction since we believed that only through education could we fight extremism. As you can see, the economic crisis put the strains on families, and this sometimes prevented families from sending their children to AUK where tuition would be charged. We are a nonprofit institution, which tuition only covers 70 to 75% of the operational cost. And the rest should be coming from different resources. We need to diversify revenue streams. Part of it would be donation or through philanthropic activities. Due to the lack of culture of philanthropy, donations and attracting funds for scholarships and establishing endowments have been consistent challenges we face. Thanks to the generosity of AUK Foundation that has been supporting AUK to offset its deficit, but the foundation has limited resources. Another major challenge is the level 4 security warning that U.S. Department of State has put on its website for Iraq, including the Kurdistan region. Despite the fact that Kurdistan has a unique security situation, which distinguishes it from the rest of country, this status has made scholars hesitate to travel to Kurdistan and or being part of the AUK community. It also affects the partnerships with American institutions, including accreditation bodies. I always associate the quality of education to a tripod, a three-legged stool, which has three legs of a student, faculty, and system. The tripod would be unstable if any one of these legs is missing. Public institutions do not charge tuition, and this has made it hard for us to attract the best and brightest students as one of the legs of the tripod because of, you know, charging the tuition fees. As you can see, we have several challenges, and we've tried to overcome these challenges, you know, by working together.
My next question is about the education system in Kurdistan. You've worked in the education sector for quite some time now, decades perhaps. And you've also obtained your PhD from the University of Nottingham in the UK, and you've been living in the US for several years. So you've experienced some of the most advanced education systems. Now, the common view is that the education system in Kurdistan needs major reform. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know where to start. We have around 36 institutions of higher education in Kurdistan, including public and private ones. No vocational schools, unfortunately. Having two ministries for education and higher education with different political affiliations has created a disconnect between K through 12 and higher education. One step to reform is to unify both ministries and put it under one umbrella, Ministry of Education. The coordination among ministries and other entities in the region is not at the desirable level which consequently leads to lack of proper inclusive planning that takes into account the environmental, social, and economic impacts. This causes an imbalance between the demands of the market and the existence of academic programs, because there is no data and planning to rely on for informed decisions. For instance, some academic programs would yield graduates without ensuring jobs. One major issue is that there is a sense of confusion in the responsibilities of ministries. Instead of being at the center of drawing up strategies and plans and developing policies for educational reform and development, drafting relevant rules and regulations and seeing to their implementation, they interfere and micromanage the operation of educational institutions. There are outdated policies, the majority of which are ad hoc. Usually, policies are a product of due diligence made through a process starting with addressing the issue that education system is facing to resolving them academically and turning them into policies that would be implemented as pilot projects before assigned to the whole system. We have not seen this process. It is proven that making institutions independent would create healthy competitions, which would positively serve the education system and provide the quality assurance that is so badly needed. The ministries have not taken any step toward making educational institutions autonomous, and there are even strong voices against such a strategy. The Ministry of Higher Education decides on enrollment of students, establishing academic programs, and approving appointment of personnel. People who are at the helm of education in Kurdistan would want to achieve and leave a legacy, but the lack of experience and knowledge are the main obstacles to fulfill their dreams. We would need experienced technocrats to lead the education system. These technocrats would create a culture of professionalism and, most importantly, the culture of continuous improvement. Two significant elements missing in the education system. Finally, the two significant steps to reform the education system are to create national education research and development centers, R&D, that contribute to production and dissemination of rigorous evidence and products that provide practical solutions to important education problems, as well as national accreditation body, which would set up standards for quality assurance, create the culture of continuous improvement, and eventually accredit in institutions and academic programs. So addressing these issues and solving them systematically would help reform education system in Kurdistan. I think this needs a collaborative effort involving all stakeholders, which would be a challenge that could be within reach.
Very well said. I certainly agree. We do need highly experienced technocrats in the KRG. And given your professional experience and knowledge, you make a great minister.
It's very kind of you. I take it as a compliment.
You're welcome. I will now pivot to Dr. Randall Rhodes. Dr. Rhodes, you've been in Kurdistan for less than a year now. Where in the States do you call home?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for inviting me today, not just to talk about the position and what we're doing at the university, but also to highlight the university to the global audience. So I'm originally from Rochester, New York. And I went to Chicago for my university, then returned back to the East Coast. I was in Maryland for 19 years, where I was within the University System of Maryland at the Frostburg campus. And while working there, transitioned from a faculty position to more of an administrative position. And then in 2015, I decided I'm going to try for an international experience. So I was provost at the American University in Armenia for 5 years, a position that well prepared me for presidency at the university, at the American University of Kurdistan. Both very similar institutions, similar missions, and very similar situations, political and social and economic situations.
And how is your experience in Kurdistan so far? Has it met your expectations?
Well, the people are extremely hospitable, very hospitable. And I didn't expect it, but living in Duhok is extremely comfortable, very peaceful, very quiet, very easy, especially for someone new and someone who obviously doesn't speak the local languages. It's very welcoming and very easy to get acclimated.
Absolutely. Duhok is very calm and peaceful and very beautiful as well. Now let's talk about the University of Kurdistan. You're the president of the university. What are your short-term and long-term goals as the president?
Well, first, I'd like to start with the long-term goals. Obviously, the university has to grow. Currently, we're about at 600 students. The current building can support about 1,100, 1,200, so we can easily double within the current space. But the university needs to be much larger, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. As Dr. Honar was saying, there's tremendous need to develop a strong higher education system. And obviously, we're very anxious to fill many of those gaps. So that would necessitate more programs, growing research, and growing community programming. In terms of short term, I can say that right now we're focusing on capacity building, maximizing what we have, and developing policies and procedures that will allow us to establish a very strong foundation upon which we can move to the next level. So right now we're doing a lot of introspection, a lot of self-assessment, a lot of monitoring of our practices so that, as I said, we have a very strong foundation. So when we do begin to grow, when we do start to add more programs, when we do start to diversify our students, we'll be completely ready to handle the new challenges.
Now, my next question to you is that the university was recently awarded a grant by the United States government from the Department of State. The grant has been awarded to support American-style higher education. Now, how does the grant support your strategy moving forward?
Well, as I mentioned a moment ago, capacity building is a main focus, not just of our short-term agenda internally, but that also is the focus of the Department of State grant from the U.S. government. It allows us to partner with six universities in the United States. I want to give a shout out to those universities. So University of Houston, University of Florida, Wayne State University, James Madison, Middle Tennessee, and also the University at Buffalo. So it allows us to establish collaborations between our faculty and the faculty of those six institutions, student-to-student engagement, staff mobilities, so we can learn more about the best practices that are a part of those historic universities' traditions. And as Dr. Honer was saying, as we move towards accreditation, not just on the institutional level, with the New England Commission of Higher Education, but even on the program level, that each of those universities that I mentioned have very strong focuses in these particular fields, and they are very conversant in these accreditation standards. So they will serve as mentors to the faculty, to the deans at AUK, to walk us through the process, to assure that the student learning outcomes, the program objectives, and everything else we are doing sets us up very well for those accreditations. So that collaboration will not only help the university, but it will also help the individuals who are part of the AUK community to grow professionally, intellectually, academically, in every way. So another very important aspect of the Department of State grant is scholarships. One major way how we differ from other institutions within Kurdistan is we are constantly focused on access. Every student should have the ability to go on to higher education. And we have to build those structures to allow every student to have access, not just maybe religious minorities, ethnicities, those that don't have the ability to pay for a variety of reasons, socioeconomic. So the grant also provided 48 scholarships, and they were targeted towards people of various minorities. So this plays into our larger American mindset that from students with disabilities to students who have been marginalized in the K through 12 system, that we can be more welcoming and ensure that our university population represents the wide demographic that actually is Kurdistan.
Great. Now you explained how the USG grant helps you achieve your vision. Are you looking for any initiatives from the KRG?
Well, the reason why a university gets accreditation with one of those six federal agencies is to introduce best practices in areas like Kurdistan or some of these other countries where American universities reside. And I was visiting with the Prime Minister today, and we were talking about this, that when a university gets U.S. accreditation, it is able to demonstrate those standards to other universities in the region. And we did the same thing in Armenia, where the government greatly respected the fact that we were able to mentor other institutions. We were able to write new regulations for the Ministry of Education that allow them to update their mindset. So we offered that AUK could serve on various commissions, task force, work groups to look over the regulations that exist, not just higher education, but also K through 12, and try to assure that in terms of teaching, modalities of instruction, pedagogies, assessment mechanisms, data-driven decision-making, that all of these, what we consider to be very basic American principles of good governance, can also be introduced here in Kurdistan. Another thing that's very important, you know, a university in the 21st century is not just an ivory tower institution where, you know, people just produce esoteric research. It's very important that a university these days work to address various issues that exist within the region or the nation. That a university is a very unique place because it houses experts in a variety of different disciplines who can work together in an interdisciplinary format in order to come up with concept papers, white papers, in order to begin to address issues in the country. So we are developing a Center for Academic and Professional Advancement, and it's going to be our outreach arm. It's much more than continuing education because it will work with the public and private sectors to develop a portfolio of courses, certificates, diploma programs for capacity building. And we can talk about, we mentioned before, entrepreneurship, startup culture, basic accounting, finance, project management, so professional communications. So we can start delivering little workshops in these various areas. And that's a part of our mission as well, not just the academic program that leads to a bachelor's degree. So we can do that on the level of the governance. We can do that on the level of the KRG. But we're poised and we have the expertise to really reach out and help people across the country, regardless of their age, regardless of what type of education they've had in the past, in order to advance themselves and obviously to help advance the economy.
My next question is about the diaspora community. There is a relatively large Kurdistani diaspora in Europe and a significant one in North America, in the US and Canada. What would you like to say to our listeners, especially to the Kurdistani diaspora?
Well, my message would be that this is a very exciting time in Kurdistan as well as at AUK. There's just so much that needs to be done, so much that could be done. So as we embark on this path, as both of us have mentioned, reaching out to the community, reaching out to the public and private sectors, perhaps many of the listeners today have connections. Maybe they have ideas. Maybe they can support some of these initiatives so we can reach out to various businesses or banks or other types of agricultural industry or waste management. So the diaspora has a tremendous amount of knowledge, a lot of expertise. And if we could work with the diaspora to design programs and initiatives that can help people back here, that would be fantastic. So we cannot do everything ourselves. We have limited means. But with the diaspora behind us, if we have effective collaboration, we definitely can start delivering programming to a variety of different audiences.
Absolutely. If planned right by the KRG, the diaspora could play a crucial role in developing Kurdistan. We're now at the final phase of the interview where we ask our guests the same three questions. Dr. Rhodes can answer the first two, and we will leave the final one for Dr. Hunar. Dr. Rhodes, the first question is, when was the first time you heard about Kurdistan?
Well, I'll have to say, like many Americans, we did not hear about Kurdistan until the downfall of Saddam Hussein. And we were shown the map of Iraq on the news every night, and it showed as if the country was heading towards being partitioned into three separate units. So that's when the American public started to learn about Kurdistan in the north. So I have to say, it was at that time.
Now the second question. What is a word or phrase that sums up Kurdistan for you?
Well, this is going to sound like an oxymoron considering Kurdistan is the land of the Bible. But I have to say my word would be young. And I choose young because there's just so much potential and so much promise that has not yet been realized in Kurdistan. So I see it as like a teenager who is just getting a sense of awareness of itself and is starting to think about what direction it wants to move into the future. But either it can be through higher education and other mechanisms and other tools. It's just starting to figure out how it will realize its future, its path of its maturity. So I have to pick the word young.
Turning to Dr. Hunar, our final question is, what is a word or phrase that sums up America for you?
Diversity. And I'm amazed with how diverse communities are in the America and how they work together to make people's life better.
Gentlemen, this wraps up our interview. Thank you so much for participating in the Kurdistan in America podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Kurdistan in America podcast, the official podcast of the Kurdistan Regional Government Representation in Washington, D.C. For more information about the Kurdistan region, please visit our website at www.us.gov.krd or follow us on Twitter at KRG_USA.